Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Holden Holland out of Ohio. He is part of the Whitetail Ledge crew, which is largely based in Ohio. The reason I interview these guys quite a bit, there's several team members, but the cool thing about all these guys is they're just average guys, many of them blue-collar Americans, working hard to kill big bucks on private land largely, but oftentimes from knocking on doors. And Whitetail Edge is an online show. The main host is Ben Rising, and he himself is in the forestry industry, kills a lot of big bucks. They knock on a lot of doors to get permission and are very successful. And so I reached out to Holden because he had an interesting 2019 season where he ended up killing his what we would call Plan B buck. He had a big buck he was chasing. He was unable to kill that buck, so he switched gears and shot his Plan B buck, which, interesting enough, he called the buck Mr. B. If you want to listen, or excuse me, if you want to watch the Whitetail Edge show, it's on Mossy Oak Go. It's also on YouTube. They also have a website, whitetailedge.com, and they have a ton of awesome content and kill a lot of big bucks. To learn more about me, visit my website, tracybreen.com, T-R-A-C-Y-B-R-E-E-N.com. I use the website to book speaking engagements. This time of year, I'm speaking at a lot of wild game dinners at churches, so if you're looking for a speaker, check out my website. Also, one of the easiest things you can do to help the podcast and me is give us a positive review on Google Play or iTunes. I'd greatly appreciate that. Before we get Holden on the phone, I want to thank my sponsors. Title sponsor, Redneck Blinds. As we head into the spring season, turkey season is upon us. They make some great blinds for turkey hunting. Their ghillie blind, which is a soft-sided blind. Also, their bale blind is used by a lot of turkey hunters. So check them out at redneckblinds.com. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, we're going to talk about them today in this episode. A lot of the Whitetail Edge crew use Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. They make camera arms that are great for self-filming. They also now make a final rest shooting system that's great for using in deer blinds to steady your gun or crossbow for the shot. Also like to thank Windscent, makers of the Windscent vaporized deer scent unit. I love Windscent. I love using it. I actually had Tracker John, a close friend of mine, do some testing on the Windscent unit. And when you vaporize urine, it's a heated scent then, and it can travel a great distance. His bloodhounds were able to smell the Windscent unit, the vapor scent, from several hundred yards away. So check out windscent.com. Morel Targets, makers of the High Roller Target, Huntworth Clothing. If you're on a budget, you're tired of, spending a lot of money on clothing, check out huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane. Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Mineral season is here. Bucks are starting to grow antlers, and now is a great time to put out deer mineral just to kind of take an inventory of the deer in your area. Also, to help them as the snow melts and they're starting to eat a lot of grass and things, they need mineral this time of year. LuckyBuckMineral.com. Grim Reaper Broadheads, Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, Illinois Connection, an outfitter in Pike County, Illinois. One of my favorite outfitters. They have some amazing bucks, amazing hunting. They hunt on over 16,000 acres of private ground, and they specialize in bow hunting. Outdoorsmen's, they make great tripod systems for glassing, as well as amazing and awesome backpacks as well for hardcore Western hunting. And Wilderness Athlete, if you're looking to shed a few pounds, check out wildernessathlete.com. They make nutritional products. My favorite, their Hydrate and Recover drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Holden on the phone. Welcome to the Drop Time Report. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How's things in Ohio? Are you having an early spring like much of the Midwest?
Yeah, we getting an early spring. We had up, it was 67 degrees yesterday, and it's supposed to snow this weekend. So,
you out scouting turkeys yet?
Not yet. I've been seeing a few and hearing a few, but I ain't actually scouted much. But
yeah, I know the Whitetail Edge crew. You guys actually have like a turkey hunting clothing line, right? Spur, is that correct?
Yep, Spur brand.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've seen some of their stuff. Well, today I want to talk about the buck you killed this fall, the twisted tail that led to him. Did he have a nickname?
Mr. B. He had a broken ear, so I called him Mr. B.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Now, you know, one thing all whitetail hunters must learn is we have to adjust, right? Things don't always go according to plan.
That's
and
right.
You killed it, you know, you killed a good buck late in the season, but you had your eyes set on a much larger buck. So let's first start out by talking about that deer, how big he was and your history with that buck.
Yeah. So the deer that I originally set out to hunt this year was a mainframe 10 that had a couple stickers on him. He would have, just guessing on hoof and pictures, I'd say he would have went mid-170s. And I've known that deer for 3 years now. I've got 2 years of sheds off of him. And when he popped up this year, he grew a pretty good bit. But he moves a lot. This deer travels a lot because he's in a really heavily pressured area.
Okay. Now, was he coming on your ground a lot, or was it hit and miss?
He was on, the actual farm that I was hunting this deer on was a permission farm, and other people had permission to hunt there too. And I would get him just occasionally, and then I actually had a guy come in and put a pop-up blind right out the bank from where I was catching him on a Spartan, and as soon as that, I noticed that blind, the pictures stopped, and he completely left there for a while, and I ended up relocating him almost 2 miles.
Oh, wow. So obviously he doesn't like pressure much, huh?
No.
And those pop-up blinds, I mean, let's face it, pop-up blinds, unless they're put up right, they can wreck it fast.
Yes, for sure. This guy, he just didn't brush it in. He didn't do anything. He just went in, popped it up, and that was it. And those deer, especially those mature deer, they notice stuff like that. Anything that's out of place like that, they're going to notice.
So you quickly had to kind of reorganize. What did you do from there?
I actually just started from the history I had with this deer. I just started moving cameras around and trying to pick him up. And where I picked him up at, I actually seen him last March, and he still had both sides. And that was the only reason that I went clear over that way and put a camera out. And he was there on a scrape right off the bat. So I just got lucky in relocating him because 2 miles, I mean, that's a long ways for around here because we're big hills.
That just tells you, you know, it'd be interesting to know, did he move 2 miles because of that blind? Is that all it took? Or was there ladies in the area? You know, what caused him to go so far? Do you think it was just the pressure?
I think it was just the pressure in that area because, no, I mean, not only was this guy had permission to be there, so, and I have permission to be there. So it's not, I can't go and tell this guy what to do or anything, but he was actually riding his fooler through the center of the whole property to get to the blind. So every time he hunted, he blew every deer in there out. And I just think the pressure that deer got, I mean, from that guy, not only from that guy, but from me too. I mean, usually a mature deer like that, you only get a couple opportunities to harvest and they know what's going on.
So he moves 2 miles and then you move 2 miles as well. And how fast did you see him from the stand?
Actually, right after I moved, I started getting pictures of him in the Spartan, and I had him come in and work a scrape at 12 yards and just didn't have enough camera light. And let him walk.
Wow, that takes some discipline, huh?
Yeah, it was hard. It was rough.
So is that kind of a deal with the whitetail edge guys? You won't take a shot if you can't film it?
Well, I mean, yeah, you don't want to kill anything that's not on film too, but it was dark enough too that, I mean, I could have shot, but I didn't want to take a chance on wounding that deer. I mean, not a deer of that caliber. I mean, it was sure. only 12 yards, but it was dark enough that you couldn't film. And the cameras nowadays, you can film quite a while. So
sure, sure. And any other opportunities after that?
Yes, actually, right before he shed and muzzleloader, the day before muzzleloader, I had him come in to 30 yards, and he had a small buck that was what he was running with then. They were starting a bachelor, and the small buck had caught something, and he didn't like, and he turned and left. And when he never blew, he didn't do anything, he just left. And when he left, that big deer, he immediately locked him up and started scent checking and just turned around and walked away. And then shortly after that, he shed.
So let's talk about that. You know, a lot of states that I hunt in and other people hunt in, the seasons don't go that long. And that's something that's unique with Ohio. I mean, your season literally goes, they can shed during hunting season. When does your season open and when does it end?
This year it was September 28th was open, and it ends February 3rd.
Wow. That is crazy long, isn't it?
Yeah, it's long, but it's nice that it's long.
Absolutely. So how long after, this encounter did he shed?
Within just shortly after muzzleloader season. But see, I didn't go in there and hunt any muzzleloader season because the area around there gets pressured, and I don't want to push that deer out of where he's at, take any chance on pushing out for him to run out in front of somebody else that's hunting around there with a gun. So I just, anytime there's firearm season, I leave those deer go.
Okay, so you're strictly bow hunting?
Yes.
So when did he, I mean, that's, give me kind of a time frame. You know, was it early January? When did he shed?
He shed about probably the second week, the end of the first week, the second week of January.
Okay. Okay. Did you see him on the hoof or get a picture of him without his horns on?
Pictures. Yeah, I got pictures of him, Spartan.
How quickly did your heart sink?
Immediately. I mean, I try to pick one deer every year and focus on that deer. And as soon as I seen that he shed, I was upset, to say the least, because I mean, I had two close encounters with that deer and couldn't seal the deal. And then all of a sudden he loses his horn. So I knew this year's chances were over.
So the good and the bad and the ugly of it though is he lives to see another day, right? I mean, and,
yep.
And hopefully, so he was 5.5, you figure, during this hunting season?
Yep.
So at 6.5, he's surely let's hope he'll be an even better buck.
Yep. You never know what they'll do from year to year, but hopefully he puts on some inches.
So that brings us to the deer. So you had a plan B, thankfully. And that deer was 5.5 years old. How quickly did you shift gears once you realized that your target buck had dropped? I mean, did you instantly go, well, I got to go after a different one?
Yeah. I mean, just immediately, because at that time in January, you know, I had quite a few deer that were shedding already. So I knew if it was going to make a move on a deer that it was going to be quick, because there was a chance that the other plan B would be shedding soon too.
Sure. So, and the buck you killed, his name was Mr. B?
Mr. B, yep.
Mr. B. So he was plan B and he was Mr. B.
Yep.
That's interesting. So, and he's been around a while. Tell us your history with him and maybe, you know, unfortunately, why you didn't want to kill him this year.
Yeah. So actually, I've had 3 years of history with this deer, and I've got 2 years of sheds off of him. And last year, he was probably a he was right at 160 from the sheds. And the year before he was an 8 point. It was probably right around 125, 130. So he took a substantial jump from 3.5 to 4.5. And with everything, you know, laid out there, looking the way that from year to year, how much he grew, I figured he would be a giant this year. And when he finally showed up, he actually was smaller than he was last year.
At 5.5. So how much did he shrink?
Probably about 5 inches.
Okay. So not significantly, but he didn't, you know, grow more, which is typically, you know, what happens with a 5.5.
Yeah. Normally he wasn't peaked out. So I figured going into this year, he was my number one deer before I had pictures of anything. That Mr. B was the deer that I had planned on focusing my season on.
Okay. Now, when you have a season as long as you guys do, that has to affect how you plan your season. You know, there's not a rush, obviously, but do you try to kill that deer early on when his feeding pattern is kind of set, or do you guys wait until, you know, pre-rut before you really get serious? What's a game plan when you have such a long season?
To be honest with you, a lot of times we have good luck early because they're on a set pattern. And when you're hunting a big deer like that and you can catch them on that set pattern early, you can get an arrow in them fairly easy as long as you can get them patterned. And then rut rolls around. And if you're hunting a certain deer, when rut rolls around, it's hard to tell where that deer is at.
Mm-hmm.
And late season, they get back to that pattern again from pretty much just food to bed.
And so was he back on that pattern when you shot him?
Actually, he was back to food to bed, but he had changed. Early season, that deer doesn't even stay where I can hunt. He stays a ways from there where there's some ag fields and stuff, and he stays around those fields through summer. And then over where I can hunt, it's more oaks and a lot of brush on the one side, and he's bedding up in that brush coming over towards those oaks.
So are you killing them over acorns then? Is that your strategy is to hunt them over acorns?
Acorns, and then kind of in between that time of year, they browse a lot. You know, around here we have honeysuckle that's real thick, and the deer love honeysuckle. And if you can find those big patches of honeysuckle, I mean, even shed hunting, you know, that's one of the main things I'll go into is try to find those big patches of honeysuckle like that. And that time of year, I mean, it was basically shed season. So I was hunting the edge of the brush right there.
So the big boy drops his antlers and you go to plan B. How many times did you hunt him and when did you kill him?
Third set. And I had a counter with him three nights before I killed him. He come in and just never offered a shot and got out of there. But the whole key, I will say this, the key to where I was hunting that deer was access. Late season, there's no green on and deer can see forever. And if you are bumping your deer going in, you're surely not going to kill anything. And to be honest with you, I was hunting probably only 150 yards from a one lane dirt road.
Okay. But you had a sneaky way in?
Yeah. Yep. I come right. That road is actually a traveled road. It's actually a township road. I could sit in my stand and watch cars drive by.
How far was he bedding from where you were hunting?
Not that far really, but it was around the end of a point and he couldn't see me to get to where I was bedding. But there was a big saddle right there where I was at, and he was crossing from bedding to food through that saddle.
Okay. Now, did you have a camera near his bedding area then, or just kind of knew his late season pattern?
Yeah, I just put a camera up in that saddle because I knew it was a pinch point to catch that deer, and I started getting pictures of him.
Okay.
And I had not to interrupt you, but I had watched this deer early on after I got pictures of him in that area and knew that he wasn't the deer that I wanted to hunt. I still had cameras in there because you never know what the season's going to bring. So I had cameras on scrapes. I had a camera in a pinch point and everything, and I was still picking up pictures of this deer.
Sure. Sure. So describe the day you killed him. Did you have a good feeling about it that day? Was it a morning sit, an evening sit?
Yeah, actually, it was an evening sit, and I had just had pictures of him that morning at almost 9 o'clock. It was like 8:45. Did he come back through there? So, and I had had an encounter with him a couple of days before, and when he went through there at that time in the morning, you know, they're not running around. They're not roaming around. They're just basically going from bed to food. And okay. I knew that once he come through there that he was going to be bedded out there, and there was a really good chance that he's coming right back through, you know, this evening.
Sure. And what day did you kill him?
January 25th.
So you had, what, a week, a season left?
Yep.
Were you getting discouraged yet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was discouraged not just so much for that deer, but just because of the season in whole. I mean, I hunted a deer all year and had two encounters, never got him killed, and then all of a sudden he loses his horn. So that kind of took the wind out of my sail.
Sure. Absolutely. I get that. So talk about your overall strategy. You know, we haven't really went into that. So you kill this deer late season, you stick with it. I can tell you're hardcore just by, you know, the brief interview beforehand. A young guy, probably not deep pockets, at least yet. Your strategy is knocking on doors, and that's been successful?
Yeah. I mean, I try to get, to be honest, I get permission on everything I can because you just don't know where that big deer is going to be. So I do a lot of velvet scouting, just riding around. But like I said, down here where I'm at in Ohio, we don't have a whole lot of big ag fields or anything to catch these deer out. So we have to rely on cameras a lot.
Okay. So you're doing your velvet scouting with a camera?
Yes. I mean, okay. And we ride around in glass in the evenings when we can, but we're limited because there's not a whole lot of fields for the deer to be in.
Sure. Yeah. You're not, so you don't put food plots in. You're basically hunting timber for the most part.
And I mean, I put food plots in, I plant standing corn and everything, but you can't, where I was hunting these deer, I couldn't put food plots in. There's not even fields or anywhere to put them. I mean, yeah, you could go in there and clear it out and make it, but it's not my property. It was permission ground. So,
yeah, you don't want to invest too much money into someone else's ground. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many pieces of property, I mean, are you, when you knock on doors, you know, we hear day in and day out now it's impossible to get permission. I mean, what's your success rate if you knock on 10 doors?
10 doors, I would say maybe two, maybe three.
Okay.
It seems like everybody you talk to either hunts or they have a relation that hunts or a nephew or somebody that's in there hunting already. And and that's a lot of times you can get permission, but there's other people that has permission there too. So you really got to watch what you do. I mean, you don't want to go in and hunt something that somebody else has already stunk the place up and ran the deer clear out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have you been able to kill decent bucks on property that other people are hunting at the same time?
I've killed 3 booners on grounds that other people were hunting on.
Now, you know, some of the experts that I've interviewed over the years say, you know, if you're in those situations, you're practically hunting the hunters, you know, you're figuring them out. So you know how to adjust. Do you find that to be true? I mean, what have you done to be different from them when they're hunting basically right alongside you?
Basically, to be honest with you, I rely on cameras a lot and I just don't go in and I try to stay away from them because the deer, after a few times, because a lot of times these guys will go in and hunt these areas and they might only have a couple places to hunt, and they'll hunt that and hunt that and hunt that. And the deer, they're not going to stop being deer. You know what I mean? They're still going to move and stuff. They're just going to adjust to them, and they're not going to go to them. So if you can figure out the land and figure out the way the deer are moving around that person, you can catch those deer moving a lot of times.
So basically you stay out, they create the pressure and push them to where you're going to hunt.
Yeah. And I rely on cameras to start showing me where that deer's at, because I mean, not always is that deer, I mean, he might relocate and not even be on that farm.
Sure. How many cameras do you have out on any given property or year?
I normally run about right around 30.
Okay. And those are all the Spartans cell cameras?
Most of them. I mean, most of them are. I still have old cameras that I still run and stuff, but I mean, I ain't got the money to buy 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Those things are, cell cameras are crazy money. I have some cutty backs and they're not cheap for sure.
But I'd say they're the number one tool of anything for helping with killing these big deer is the cell cams like that, because you can not have to go in there.
Now, how many different properties do you have set up?
This year I had, 9 different farms that I was running cameras on a good bit. And the reason that I was on those farms is because I had deer on those farms in previous years that I expected to be there this year.
Okay. Now that brings up another good point. We are right in the middle of shed season right now. How does that play into your plan and your strategy when you're knocking on doors, you're hunting these places year in and year out, but they're not your farm? I mean, are you heavily focused on going into those areas and getting the sheds?
I am, because right now is when I can learn everything about that property and not have to worry about running all the deer off. I can go in and learn everything, just like that deer that I hunted all year that shed. I can go in there now and stomp literally every inch of that and see the sign that he left and what the deer were doing to have a better idea for next year. You know what I mean?
Sure. And my guess is he's number one on the hit list next year, huh?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. As long as he shows up, you never know about these deer. I mean, we could have EHD or you could get hit by a car or.
Yeah.
You never know.
Do you think having the long, super long season like you have, I mean, is it, do a lot of big bucks get get killed late like that?
Quite a few, actually, from what I've noticed, because the deer get hunted a lot during the rut. I mean, let's face it, that's when everybody's out. Rut around here, you can't even find a place to pull off because that's everybody takes their vacation for rut and everything. And then we have a gun season that's the beginning of December. And then we have another 2-day gun season that's the middle of December. And then the first few days of January is our muzzleloader. So they really get hunted hard right there. And then 9 times out of 10, most of your guys will quit after muzzleloader season. They're done. So you got a while there before they shed that these deer will start getting comfortable again because they're not getting the pressure.
So this deer you shot, how much of his time was spent on his feet? I mean, do you think the pressure had still affected the way he was moving around, or was he back to a pretty, I mean, how quickly do they bounce back?
A while, actually. I mean, this deer, even just going through his natural, was just edgy all the time. I mean, he had been hunted all year. I mean, not by me, but there's people that hunt around there and there's people that gun hunt around there and everything. So these deer, one little whiff of you or anything that triggers them, they're gone this late season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that it has to be the downside. You know, they're just getting hunted so hard that they wake up in the morning thinking there's a boogeyman behind every tree.
Yeah. And that's why I said earlier, your late season, really your access and everything is key, because if you don't have good access where you're going to be blowing deer out or anything, you might as well not even hunt.
Sure. Now let's talk about filming for a minute. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms sponsors this podcast, and I know you film for Whitetail Edge. There's a lot of people getting into filming now, and obviously you've been filming with Whitetail Edge for several years. How does that affect the difficulty of the hunt? Do you self-film?
Probably about 50% of the time nowadays I'll self-film, because it's hard to get people on the same schedule all year long. I mean, you can take vacation, but around here, you know, a lot of times if that deer shows up and it's a Wednesday and I can get out of work, you better believe if the conditions are right, I'm going to be in there. And it's a lot of times it's hard to get somebody else to be able to go in there too. So without the fourth arrow, it would be impossible.
So give me a couple, self-filming tips, if you will, for everybody out there. I mean, everyone is filming these days. So what things have you learned through the School of Hard Knocks to just lay down better footage when self-filming?
self-filming. I would say that's a good one.
I stumped you there, huh?
Yeah. I hate self-filming, and just because first off,
it's a lot more to worry about. It's a lot more to worry about.
And first off, I'm a hunter before anything else. And a lot of times when those big deer come in, I would rather be worrying about trying to kill the deer than worrying about the camera. But when you're self-filming, there's so much stuff you have to do to try and worry about the camera. You want to worry about the camera. You got to catch everything on. Filming's tough.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do to create good footage when you're trying to do both, I guess? I mean, do you use second angle cameras or?
I actually run 3 second angle cameras just to try to capture everything. And I turn them all on and just let them roll.
Using GoPros or?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your main camera?
Sony PXWX70.
Okay. And what camera arm are you using? I mean, I know it's fourth arrow, but is there a certain model you like the best?
Yeah, the Pro, the Outfitter, or the Pro, the bigger one, because I found with my camera and everything on it, my camera weighs 13 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And with the Pro series, it's a lot heavier duty. There's not as much movement in it. Because, I mean, I started out with a lighter because you obviously want to be as light as you can get. And my camera was just too heavy for it. So I went to the Pro Series, and I loved it. I mean, I haven't had a problem with it at all.
So do you keep multiple bases for that arm in trees then and just bring the arm?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. That's the nice thing for sure.
Yeah, without that, I mean, because you can just get in and be so quiet. Without having to, and quick.
So do all your hunts end up on the Whitetail Edge series?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, I've talked to Ben a little bit over the years, but that is it's on Mossy Oak Go, right?
Yep. Mossy Oak Go, YouTube, and it's on one more platform too.
Okay.
I can't remember right off the bat what it is, but yeah. And it's a web show that's basically following these guys, us guys, trying to pursue larger deer and teach what we're doing in pursuing these deer.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, you know, everybody on Whitetail Edge, they have a day job, right? No one is making a living doing this. Ben Rising, the main host, he's a forester, timber guy. So everybody has a job. And so you're just like everybody else, just out there grinding. But I've noticed over the years of watching Whitetail Edge, because Redneck Blind sponsors them, and I work for Redneck Blind some too, you guys just consistently kill big bucks, you know, without having deep pockets. So you just stay after it.
Yep. Yep. That's, I mean, it's just a passion, I guess, you have to have to pursue it with. I mean, because like you said, we're just regular guys. We don't get paid for hunts or anything. So, I mean, I would still be doing everything I'm doing now, whether I was with Whitetail Edge or not.
Maybe not filming, though, huh?
Yeah.
I know it is a lot of work, you know, and a lot of discipline. Let's face it, it takes a lot of discipline to go through all that extra effort.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that deer, that big deer this year, I mean, that was a tough one to swallow.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that next year he's 200 inches and it makes the weight worth it.
For sure. One could only hope. Well,
yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on today and good luck this spring turkey hunting and shed hunting and just good luck to you overall.
All righty. Thank you.
Yep. Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye. I certainly appreciate everyone listening today. Until the next episode, to learn more about Whitetail Edge, like I said earlier, whitetailedge.com. To learn more about me, tracybreen.com. And go ahead and give us a positive review on Google Play or iTunes, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Until next time, God bless and take care.